Bit of a light crowd, but that's okay. Let's go ahead and get started. Thank you everybody for being here. It's an honor and pleasure to be speaking here, and the subject of our discussion today is going to be the advantages of dry stack automation and concrete construction. And when I say discussion today, please stop me anytime you have a question. Raise your hand, feel free to talk about it as we go along. We're going to cover quite a bit of information, so please feel free to stop me and ask questions as we go along. Okay? What we're trying to do is we're redefining the future of the dry stack marina. And when I say redefining it, we're kind of hoping to get you to think outside the box about a new way of doing things. On the left-hand side, you'll see a traditional dry storage marina. Notice in the background the 4-hour firewalls between the boat bays. That's what we mean by concrete construction in this particular scenario. And on the right hand side, you'll see an animation rendering of the automated machinery, which we're going to talk more about as well. A little bit about me. I have over 30 years experience in construction. We've done some high profile dry storage marinas. We did the first in the world all concrete tilt wall dry stack, which is the Hamilton Harbor, and we helped co-develop the ASAR stacker crane, which is fully automated with LTW Intralogistics out of Austria. So let's jump right in. The advantages of the concrete construction. Some of you may not know what that looks like. This is a photo, an in-progress photo, and what I'd like you to notice, this particular project is about 65 foot tall. Notice the all concrete walls between the bays, and in this new type of construction, we've even done concrete plank between the levels. The reason we've done that is in this new storage scenario, we're actually stacking boats 2 and 3 boats deep. So if you can imagine, we basically have a rolling load up in the air. So it's not like a traditional forklift that's setting it on 2 beams. We're actually rolling, basically it's a dry aisle in the sky, okay? So that's why we went to the concrete plank scenario. It wound up being less expensive and better all around than trying to do it out of steel. So it has a few other advantages besides the fire rating. It keeps the water from dripping on the boats below and that sort of thing. So this is the Hamilton Harbor project that I mentioned. And what I want to bring up about that is it's a very attractive building. This particular building was the first in the world. We think that's a record setter, but another record setter is it took about 18 years to permit this building. So it was in a very nice neighborhood, and they did not want a dry storage building in their neighborhood, a traditional dry storage. Amazingly, after the project was finally completed, some of the neighbors that fought it the hardest are some of the best customers of the marina. So it actually turned out very well. Here's another project that we did, and again, just highlighting the aesthetics. Good looking project. This one's not too far away in Marco Island, Florida. If you notice, that is a retail store in the foreground that we kept in place the entire time. That's a very successful retail store. They have a ferry that runs out of there. And so we never shut that store down for even a day, and we built the new facility within 8 inches of the previous facility. Here's a picture of what it looked like before. So what I want to mention about aesthetics, an important part about aesthetics, when you're in a redevelopment scenario, and even in a greenfield scenario, it's much easier to get some concessions out of your municipality or your neighbors if you're going to do a nice looking building. So for example, most people are pushing back or fighting the traditional looking dry storage building. But if you can give them something nice looking, in this scenario and the other scenario, we were able to get more height as a concession from the neighbors and the county to do something nice looking. And what I want to point out in this slide is notice we've done office, two-story office that adjoins the building. And so we're able to kind of bring the building down a little bit and do more things with it than just have a giant, building look. And so one of the ways we're able to achieve that, not just from an architect, or it enhances the architectural look, but it's also because of the fire rating we're able to achieve with the concrete construction. Marina fires are fairly uncommon. However, when they do break out, they are typically a catastrophic loss. Here's a photograph of one that's on fire. And when they do burn, as you can imagine, boats have fuel, plastics, all the things that the fire guys really dislike. So an important thing that some of you may or may not know, when you're dealing with a new project, the NFPA does not have a standard for dry storage marinas and fire protection systems. So they leave it up to what's called the authority having jurisdiction, which is means usually the local fire marshal. Okay, and what happens in that scenario is you could get lucky and get by with a kind of a light fire rating system, or you could get hit pretty hard. In Hamilton Harbor scenario, we had to add 2 10-inch wells and a fire pump, which cost about $1 million. So every scenario is different, but we think that with some of this stuff coming up in the future, you're going to see some more standards that get more and more costly, but more and more safe. And I'll show you the next slide, which kind of talks about that. What happened to us in this project we're working on now, which is the Gulf Star Marina, the fire marshal has made us go to a full foam suppression system. Now, the bad news about that is that's cost us a fair amount of money and a lot of time to design that system. And that's been a burden. But on the other hand, it's an extremely safe system. So when you're trying to do condominiums or hotel rooms above or around your building, you can now get it approved because this system is so safe. This system will actually fill the entire barn with foam in 12 minutes automatically without any human intervention. It has to have 2 triggers, both smoke and heat. But once it sets off, it's a very safe system for the neighbors and for anything adjoining. And here's what I mean by aesthetically pleasing as well, and some of the possibilities that you can do when you have those fire ratings. This is a project we're working on an owner with in South Florida. This is one floor of retail with 2 floors of office above. I don't know about you guys, but I think that's a pretty good looking dry storage building. Most of your neighbors wouldn't fight that look of a building, and especially with no noise. Anybody got any questions so far? Okay. This is just another look of that same building. And this is another angle on it. What I want to point out about this angle is we're able to do rooftop restaurants and pools. You see the potential swimming pool up in the right hand side. Because we have so much real estate up there in the fire ratings, you could do tennis courts, you could do volleyball, you could do all kinds of things up there. So just kind of think about your project as potentially making a destination, not just a dry storage barn. So it brings a whole other dimension. Yes, sir. Are you talking about boat units, or are you talking about that particular barn is probably going to be in the neighborhood. We'll talk a little bit about reconfigurability here in a minute, but probably that would be around 600 or 700 boats. That's a pretty large building, plus the retail on the outside. Oh, okay. He asked how many boats would go in that building. And I'll try and do that going forward. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so let's talk about wind rating as well. Fire rating is certainly important. Aesthetics are important. Let's talk about wind rating. This is a picture of a dry storage building in the Panhandle. And as you can imagine, everybody wants to get their boat in there before the storm hits. This particular marina owner, like my marina owners as well, charge a pretty good premium to put the boats in the aisle in an approaching storm. And unfortunately for these guys, that didn't work out so well. So the wind rating that these new systems have is far in excess of any of the old traditional methods. We have to derate our building because of the windows and doors are the weakest point. So the windows and doors will blow out at around 175 or 200 mile an hour, depending on what windows and doors you buy, but our structure will stand far in excess of that. So it's a peace of mind for the owners in safety. One thing I want to point out about this slide, if you notice, see all the boats down on the left-hand side that weren't in the barn? They actually did fine. So in that scenario, it was better to keep your boat outside than inside. So just to kind of summarize the advantages of the concrete part of my discussion today, and one thing we didn't touch on was lower insurance premiums. Hamilton Harbor gets about a 20% discount because of the fire ratings and the concrete wind ratings on their as a marina owner. Their patrons also receive a discount for being inside that type of construction. Sound attenuation, it's very quiet. Obviously, even in the traditional scenario, when the forklift's running inside the barn, you can't hear it outside the barn very well, and the backup alarms are deadened. However, that doesn't help much once your forklift leaves the barn, and then again, the fire and wind ratings and the architectural advantages. So that pretty much summarizes the concrete portion of it. Yes? Okay, the question is, when you're using the horizontal plank system, does it make it difficult to change height? And the answer is yes. It is much more difficult. It is doable, but it would be costly. And when I say costly, I don't know what that number would be, but yes, it would be more difficult than just drilling a few holes in a column. Yes, sir. That's a really good question. I have not explored that at all. The question is, how does the IRS look at it as a single-use building for depreciation? I'm going to assume it would depreciate at the same rate as a traditional, if that helps answer your question, but I don't know if that does or not. I have not explored that. What I would tell you is the Hamilton Harbor, for example, we think the life cycle of these buildings is in excess of 50 to 100 years. Hamilton Harbor is 12 years old. They put a paint job on it, and it looks like brand new again. So they really look good for a long period of time. Any other questions? Okay. So let's go to the advantages of automation. I've got a animation here to kind of show you how it works. Not kind of show you how it works. We have an incoming vessel that comes to a platform lift. Notice the machine goes down the aisle and up at the same time. It's very fast. It goes 11 mile an hour down the aisle and 3.5 mile an hour up at the same time. It has a shuttle that lives on the crane, and each boat lives on its own cradle. So you can customize the cradle should you have a stepped hole or something like that. I stopped the animation here to explain something real quick. This is a handoff point. The internal shuttle that lives on the crane hands it off. The animation only shows one inbound outbound lane, but our owner chose to go with two inbound outbound lanes. He didn't want a bottleneck there. I think it was a really good idea. So there's a handoff point. It hands it off to two shuttles that live outside with two platform lifts. Okay, that makes sense. We have about, in this particular project, we have about 70 feet between the water and the platform lift and the building. The staff would obviously stage and bring the boat on here, in our opinion. We would not have the patrons doing this. And we have finger piers down beside it. So they would, it doesn't drive on the lift. You would just pull it on the lift. Okay, I stopped the animation again here. You see like a gray outline of a building. Originally, we had planned to automate the washdown system here. One of the things that happens with the automation, no one can go where the automation is. No one goes in the building. And we felt like in this scenario, it would be better to wash these boats manually. We didn't feel like, or my owner didn't feel like, and I agree with him, that the automatic washdown system is not going to get the blood and guts off of the boat like it really needs to happen. We also feel like from a liability standpoint, there's a lot of reasons why you should be checking that boat as a marina owner before it gets put away, making sure no one's been left on the boat, making sure the battery switches are off, and that sort of thing. So we've opted to go manually from the water to the building, if that makes sense. That's an operational procedure up to the marina owner, but that's always a good idea. Again, we got the handoff point. Down the aisle and up at the same time. It's all proportional. Very quiet. You can hardly hear the thing run. And it goes to grab another vessel. So what I want to point out here is notice that, again, the vessels are 2 and 3 deep. No other system does that, and I'll explain to you here in just a second what the advantages are there with the next graphic. Okay, so this is a traditional forklift scenario. In this graphic, this is really kind of modeled after the Hamilton Harbor project, and we were putting away 50-foot boats. That was 10, 12 years ago, and those were quite large boats at the time. As you know, the boats keep growing and growing. But if you notice, we needed an 85-foot drive aisle for the turn radius of the forklift. If you notice the red hatched marks on the drive aisle, that's space that the new system is able to get you back as sellable, leasable footage. Okay, so that's how we start making the developer or marina owner more money. So we get that space back, and then notice up the taller that you go, the less capacity the forklift has, and the harder it is to put those boats away. So notice the red triangle, that's space that you're going to lose for costly construction. Okay? So the next graphic shows you kind of how we get that back for you. We're able to get by with only 2 feet larger than our largest vessel, and that's length overall. So 52 foot for a 50-foot boat. We're then able to put boats a couple deep and extend, if your project allows for it, extend the depth of that bay. So we would put 2 50-footers end-to-end or 3 30-footers or 32-footers end-to-end. So what I want you to understand about that reconfiguration, in a traditional sense, if you build a dry storage for 50-foot boats and everybody doesn't show up with a 50-foot boat on day one, you're going to lose revenue. You're only typically able to charge by the lineal foot of that boat or something to that effect. So in this scenario, you're able to put 325s or 330s away and chart and gain some revenue. And maybe you reconfigure that later for the 50-footers as they show up. But if that takes 5 or 10 years for you to fill that barn with 50-footers, we see that reconfigurability is a huge advantage. This particular project, we made the crane for 20,000 pounds, and it's a 40-foot. Oh, yeah. Well, my personal opinion is once you get above 50, 55, boats are starting to want to be born to live in the water. However, I would agree there's a lot of 60-foot, 55-foot center consoles being built now. But at the end of the day, you know, do you want to build your project for 5% of the crowd or 95% of the crowd? So that's really just a personal decision as a developer or owner, you know. Oh, we can design as heavy a load as needed. One of the cranes that we have now is 100 feet long. I don't know the weight limit on that particular one. So, but we can certainly design it heavier. Safety is another consideration for the automation. I'm not sure what this guy's looking for, but I hope he's not looking for the operator. So boat damage, those types of things are reduced and or eliminated. And safety considerations as well. So kind of to summarize the advantages of the automation, up to 50% increase in rentable sellable cubic space. So we're able to store multiple vessels deep. We can store the full-size vessels at the top level if need be. And we have approximately a 44% reduction in dry aisle space. So between the concrete and the automation, we feel like it brings a whole new dimension to your potential projects. This is the project that I've been telling you about, the Gulf Star Marina. It's a redevelopment project, as you can see. This is what it looked like when we started. And here's a shot of it going down. That's the way I like to see the old ones. And this is a rendering of what it'll look like when it's complete. So again, we were able to get some concessions from the city and the county and the neighbors. And here's a quick time lapse. What I want you to notice, that center aisle, if you notice, is 4 feet deeper than the rest of the building. We actually recessed the crane into a little bit of a pit, like an elevator, and we do that to use up some of the space so that we don't kill more space up above. We do that to save some rentable, sellable footage. We also do have to be about 4 feet taller in the center bay, which does kill a little bit of height. As some of you may know, height is a really big issue in a lot of these scenarios. We're fighting for every inch of space for the developer property owner. This slide just shows kind of the in-progress photo. You'll notice one panel being lifted, one's behind it already poured, and another one's being fabricated over here on the left. And what it shows you is this whole system's happening pretty much within the footprint of the building. We have very little space. If you notice, the trailer park on the north is about 15 foot away from the building itself. And I got a few, man, that's having a little trouble over there. And this shows it a little bit better. See how close we are to that trailer park? We also had an operating restaurant and had to keep their parking lot open the entire time. So, it just kind of shows what we are able to do in a very tight, restricted space, which most waterfront properties of any value are in a tight, restricted space. Okay, and then there's a little closer look at it as it's nearing completion. And here's a center aisle shot of the crane being put together. This particular slide shows how we had to put the crane together. We had to leave an opening in the roof and put the crane in down through the roof. And here's a shot of the crane, building the crane. This helps give you a little bit of scale. Notice on the left-hand side, there's a lifting motor. And it's a little bit tough to see, but there's a drive shaft that couples, there are two lifting motors. They're coupled together, so if you lose a motor, we have built-in redundancy. If you lose we have both dual lift motors and dual drive motors. So very, very reliable machinery, all electric. And there are no diesel or hydraulic. This just kind of gives you a little bit of scale. The picture in the right hand, that's a 6 foot step ladder on the bottom. So it's a very, very big machine. This is where the shuttle lives on the platform. Rolls in between those angle iron and then mates up with rails that are on the concrete plank. And so think about a few more possibilities. We've actually reserved a space in this particular project for us to bring cars in and put them on the cradle. We've designed a cradle so it can be folded down. We can put a car away one-to-one with the boat. It's not something that would be done on a regular basis, but on a high traffic day it can be done, or it could be planned that way all along. So what that can potentially do for you is give you help with your municipality and reduce some of your surface parking needs. We could actually dedicate an entire couple of bays to car parking. So just again, I'm trying to get you to think about the possibilities, right? And when you have that project that's struggling with, you know, could be fire rating, could be parking, could be a lot of things, but just opens up new possibilities. So that pretty much includes what I had to talk about today, redefining the future of the dry stack marina and hopefully opening your mind up to some of the new possibilities. Yes, sir. That's correct. I'm glad you asked that because I kind of went by that without talking about it. Okay, so in this scenario, the scenario of the project we're doing now, we have a service and polishing bay. We have a fabric door that rolls up and brings the boat in. We've actually are air conditioning that space and it's well lit. So the folks can work, it's basically a work rack, and we can stick four boats in there at any given time. Okay, and now we have also reserved another bay next to it for future, if we feel like there's not enough service area, we can dedicate another bay to that. This is a pretty small, tight marina, so we didn't want to start dedicating bays, you know, if we didn't need them, but we have reserved that ability to do so, and I want you to think about something else when it comes to a bay like that. This marina is not doing it, but in our mind, we think that could potentially be a showroom as well. So if you have boat sales on site, imagine if you will, bringing a customer to your site and you bring that 35 footer into a well-lit air conditioned space. Right? Now you've got the family there. They're walking around the boat. They're going to stay longer. They're not outside in the heat or the rain or the cold. Right? So you've got kind of a little bit more time to sell that boat, captive audience, so to speak. And let's just say that they say, well, we really like the 32. Can you bring me the 37? Within 5 to 10 minutes, they have to step outside of that room. But you can make provisions for that. You bring them to the 35 or the 37. Now they can spend time walking around that boat and get to know that boat. You could have glass on the outside all along the entire face, and you could be lighting those boats up at night from a sales and showroom presentation. Now the family says, you know what, we really like this 37. Can we take it for a ride? 5 to 7 minutes later, you got it in the water and you're taking a ride on it. So we think it, again, opens up a tremendous amount of possibilities that really we don't think have been exploited before, if that makes sense. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, it has to come in by water. That's correct. No, if they want to work on it, the work bay they can walk into. Yes. Yes. Yes, sir. And they have right next door, this particular facility has a large repair facility right next door that has a travel lift and stuff. So there's the potential in that scenario to work with that. But we can put, there's so many options for that. We could leave a bay open that you could back a trailer into and do an overhead hoist system to set it down on a trailer. So there's a lot of ways to have a lot of options. This owner didn't want a whole, again, it's a small area, right? It's a small footprint. It's about 30,000 square feet. And he didn't really want a whole lot of heavy mechanical work going on there. He felt like that just eats up too much of his space. But there's a lot of scenarios where you really need it. So I hope that answered your question. Software? This is fully automated, yes, sir. And so the LTW partners that we have 2,300 of these cranes running worldwide. They've been building them since the early 80s, all of which are still running and fully supported over the internet. And they'll give you a list of all 900 or so customers. They have about 100 cranes running for just IKEA alone. So the software is a very robust software. It's capable of a lot more. If you really think about, we're just taking, both these scenarios are really just taking previous existing technology and applying them to the marine industry, which is kind of, hasn't progressed much in a lot of years, right? So this automation is warehouse automation. They just upsized it and put a boat on the pallet, if that makes sense. So for example, when my owner and I went to see the machinery run that caused him to decide to buy it, it was in a warehouse in Atlanta that moves about 30,000 cases a day. That particular crane moves 400 times a day. So it also does first in, first out. It knows where it's a juice production facility, and it knows where the oldest juice in the warehouse is by 10 minutes. So it's capable of a lot more than just moving 50, 60 boats a day. It's quite frankly, this machine's really asleep its entire life. It's the particular one in Atlanta is capable of doing 600 or 700 moves a day. On a normal day in a marina, you're going to move, I don't know, maybe 20 times a day, and big days are 60, 70 times a day for most marinas. Yes, ma'am.
So does the software give you the option as boat owner to call in just a short period at a time instead of maybe a day or even 2 days?
Very good question. She's asking about how to call in a short period of time or given a heads up. My owner is going to integrate it with an app. So you would be able to get online and see what spaces are available. So from that standpoint, it's not really any different than another marina. If somebody's already picked 8 o'clock and you want yours at 8, it's first come, first serve. However, you'll be able to get on the app, and I actually keep my boat near this particular marina, and I have that same app, and it shows what slots are available. We think the throughput's going to be quite a lot faster on this, so we'll be able to launch more boats. So, you know, there'll be more slots available, if that makes sense. And then there's always that scenario where if the marina manager is your brother-in-law, and you like your brother-in-law, and he likes you, you get your boat out quicker than anyone else. So it can be overridden is what I'm saying. Yeah. But the patron would typically do the ordering, and there's just someone sitting there monitoring the screen. And obviously, your bottlenecks are going to be your boat washing on the way in and your staging, right? So if this thing starts spitting out boats faster than you can move them out of the way and get people on them, it's not going to – there's always a bottleneck somewhere, if that makes sense. And sometimes that's not automation. Yes, sir. There's very few, absolutely. We also keep spare parts on hand at that particular marina, but the uptime is over 99%, and there really is not much in the way of moving parts. So a good example that I can give you, I flew another customer up probably a month ago to Atlanta, where that juice production facility is that I was telling you about. That juice production facility serves the Atlanta School Board juice every morning. So that crane has to run, right? It's been running 10 years, and the customer I flew up there, first thing he does is go over to the operator and said, what happens when it breaks down? And I'm standing there, and the LTW guys are standing there, and I was like, well, I can understand why he would ask that, but I wasn't prepared for him to ask that yet. And the operator, the guy that runs that monitors the thing and orders stuff, looked right at him, and he said, if you do your maintenance, it never goes down. And he kind of grinned, and he said, we failed in our maintenance routine once upon a time, and what happened was they were not paying attention to their computer is supplied by the owner. They didn't pay attention to how many records it was keeping, and it filled their hard drive up. And that's actually what stopped the software from running. But other than that, they've not had a mechanical failure that they couldn't overcome. And again, that does 30,000 cases of juice every day. So very, very reliable machine. No, not necessarily. We would train your people to do the preventative maintenance. Ideally, we would come in once a quarter or once a year just to double check the machine for you. But ideally, your folks would learn to do the routine maintenance on it. It's not a lot. Just to take it a step further, without trying to get into the weeds here, but in the past, all these cranes have been built with cables. So one of the failure points was cable wear and steel pulleys. They've now gone to a belt system. The cables were failing around 350,000 revolutions or exercises. They exercised the belt to 1.3 million, and it got about a 5% wear on the life cycle. So I did the math. I think that's around 30 million revolutions or something like that, which I'm not going to be around after the first 1.3 million of them. But when you see this belt, it's about that wide, and it's made kind of like a tire. It's a toothed belt. When I took those pictures, I didn't have it, but if anybody like to see it, I have on my laptop. I actually took some photos of the machine moving yesterday with the belt moving, the drive shaft moving, and all that type of stuff. So we're in the process of starting to program it right now. And I would invite anybody that would like to. It should be up and running by about April. So anyone that would like to come see it run or would like videos of it running or like to keep up with it, be happy to put you on our email list and or, tour you on the project in person. So just leave me your card or leave me your phone number, and I would be excited to show it to you, actually. Even though I've been working on this project for years, it took me about 10 years with the customer, but I have to tell you, I was out of town when they put the machine together, when I got back, it is just a massive, impressive piece of machinery, and it operates smooth as silk, and you can't hardly hear it run. It's very impressive, I promise you. It'll be worth your trip to come see it. Inside the building? What we did, and that's a little bit of an interesting story, I won't say funny story. So our bottom level is 18 foot, then we went 16, 14, 12. Does that answer your question? Okay. And in one bay, we did one bay that was, I'll call it an odd bay, where we went a little bit lower. And in retrospect, the owner just keeps coming up with more things he wants to do on the ground. He's actually, I take it personal, he keeps stealing bays from me on the bottom, but it's his marina, so he gets to do whatever he wants. But the problem with that is he's taken up about 5 of those bottom bays now out of 10. And if I had known that, or he had known that, we would have put the 12-footer on the bottom. So every time he takes up a bay, it's an 18-foot bay, one of the most valuable bays he could have. So in retrospect, that from a planning perspective, maybe you don't want your biggest boats on the bottom, because if you use those bays up, you don't need an 18-foot ceiling in your ship store or your break room. And he's done, and now he's added a locker room with a set of bathrooms, kind of like a captain's lounge he took another bay up for. So unfortunately, he's burning up some of the best money bays. So in retrospect, we would have probably put the lower ones on the bottom and the bigger ones further up. Just kind of one of those things that you couldn't have seen, right? Cost? It's more than a traditional lift. That's just a... It's one of those things we really have to take every marina, and we do that for no cost, which is give you an estimated price and an estimated, if you give us your rent rate, we'll give you an estimated ROI. But it's hard to say. In other words, people ask me how much per slip. Well, that particular building that I just showed you, I can put 425 footers in there, or I can put 240 footers in there. Well, it's the same building, and it's the same cost to build that building. So it cuts the price in half if I double the number of boats. So, you know, we like to try and look at it from an ROI perspective than a cost perspective. And what I would tell you is, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. What I would tell you is, if your rent rates are below $20 a foot, it's probably not going to be an advantage for you or work for you from a monetary standpoint, if that makes sense. The higher the rent goes, the more money this thing will make you. So if you're in downtown Miami at $35 a foot, it'll make you a fortune. If you're at $15 a foot, it's probably not worth doing at all. If that's helpful to help answer your question. This facility, the building was around $9 million and machinery just under $3 million. So about $12 million. 30,000 feet, but it's 65 foot tall. And that's including parking, paving, impact fees. You know, that's another problem that you kind of run into is when you get quoted building numbers, they're just a building, and there's a lot more to a building, as you know. Well, certainly additional that's the idea we're trying to get to here with this new stuff is the additional revenue streams of condominiums, restaurants, pools, and making it a destination, creating sometimes a club atmosphere, so you bring those rent rates up. We're looking at a project right now to give you an example of thinking outside the box. We're working on a project with an owner right now. They have 220 foot of height. Okay, well, it's not worth it trying to store boats at 220 foot, but think of boats to 60 or 70 foot and condominiums above. This is on the Intracoastal Waterway, so you kill what's normally your lowest money producing condominiums with car and boat parking. And now once you get up to that 60, 70 foot, this particular project, you can see right to the ocean. You know, it's a pretty nice marriage of the two concepts. Now maybe you sell the condo with a boat slip included or something to that effect. So that's the kind of thing we're trying to, you know, open the potential, you know, to new projects. And we're talking to folks, believe it or not, all over the world. Europe, Australia. We have a guy very interested in the south of France, another one in Cancun. So in Europe, they really are adverse to unattractive buildings anywhere near their beach. The traditional is not, it's not even a topic of conversation. It's not, you know what I'm saying? Their municipalities just will not allow it. And by the way, over there, most of the beachfront and waterfront and all is owned by the municipality. So they do a 30-year lease to a developer. So it's kind of a little, it's a whole different animal, but attractive buildings become, and sustainability and quietness and all those things become really, really important. And they're becoming more important here as well. But over there, it's really important. I've kind of had to adjust my thought process to that a little bit. Sure. Lifting the water is what? Yes, sir.
Is there application that you can use on like a regular boat ramp? It's probably going down the ramp into the water rather than having it.
Yeah, sure. That could be designed where you almost do like a trailer, so to speak, and the trolley moves the trailer up or down. Sure. Sure. Understood. Makes sense. Yep. Okay. That is doable. Yes. I know someone who's designed one, I think in Marco, to do that same thing with a single family residence. But yes, it's certainly doable. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. I appreciate your time. And enjoy the show. Thanks.